Please join me in a spirit of prayer. Spirit of love that binds us one to another, we come together with hearts that are heavy with sadness or full of joy. We come to share in this experience together, to reflect on the beauty in our lives, to find our truth so that we might live more freely in the world. Let us hold this moment in silence. Blessed be, and amen.
Our ancient reading this morning is from Romans 12, 6 through 8, the New International Version of the Bible. We have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us. If your gift is prophesying, then prophesy in accordance with your faith. If it is serving, then serve. If it is teaching, then teach. If it is to encourage, then give encouragement. If it is giving, then give generously. If it is to lead, do it diligently. If it is to show mercy, do it cheerfully. In our modern reading is Know Yourself, retold by Sarah Conover and Frida Crane, from Ayat Jamila, Beautiful Signs, a treasury of Islamic wisdom for children and parents. Kanya Makan, i.e. once upon a time, there was and there was not a man known far and wide for his generosity. One day, sitting with his friends sipping coffee in the village square, a poor woman approached him with a small request for money to feed her child. "Of course," he replied, and without hesitation plucked coin after coin out of his pocket, piling them into the woman's hand until they spilled on the ground. Overwhelmed with this show of kindness, the woman began to weep. She bowed her head in gratitude. "May Allah bless you, sir. You have saved my child's life." She carefully placed the coins in a small cloth sack. Glancing up a last time, she thanked him with a frail half smile. When she was out of earshot, the man's friends probed him with questions. "Why did you give her so much money?" asked one. "That was foolish. Don't you think she will tell all her friends?" asked another. "A line of beggars will be at your door tomorrow morning," warned a third. "Just yesterday, you gave your zakat, your charity," said a fourth. "You weren't obliged to give her any. Why did you do it?" The generous man kept silent until their indignation ran its course. At last they quieted down. "While such a poor woman may be pleased with just a little money from me," said the generous man, "I couldn't have been." He looked from friend to friend. "Unless I give her what I am able to, I won't be happy. She may not know me, but I know myself." And the group of men, thoughtful and contrite, said no more about it.
When I first agreed to deliver this sermon a few weeks ago, I only had a couple hours to submit a topic, so I figured it's the week after Thanksgiving, I'll talk about giving thanks. It was a couple of days later that I realized, first, Charlie would already be preaching about giving thanks the week before, and second, which is probably the bigger of the two issues, while I had some ideas about gratitude and giving thanks kicking around in my head, I was really a lot more moved to talk about generosity, and especially generosity as it relates to gratitude. This semester, I've been studying Buddhism, and I've been especially taken with the Buddhist practice of generosity. especially the circular link between gratitude and generosity. Buddhists vow to practice and eventually to perfect generosity. The perfection of it goes beyond giving to those in need. It includes being open and grateful to receiving gifts, and it considers our motive for giving. A higher level of generosity derives from selflessness. It takes myself and my goodness out of the picture, and instead considers our interconnectedness as the reason for giving. Put another way, we should give to alleviate suffering in the world, but more perfect giving is also knowing how to accept gifts from others graciously and with gratitude. We give to those in need, recognizing that in giving, we are receiving. In the story that the youth helped me with earlier, once the father figures out his daughter's riddle, the gift that you cannot buy, for it is worth all the money you have, but only you can give it, he comes to a riddle of his own. By giving you time, I will gain more than I give. The father in that story hits on something important. Through giving his gift, he is also receiving a precious gift. But oftentimes, the generosity that is called for is not just time. It's money, or things that we buy with money. And here's where things might get a little more sticky. It's one thing to be generous with our time, but with money, how can we be generous when we don't have much to give? In the story that I asked Jack to read, there is a man known far and wide for his generosity. When a poor woman approaches him and asks for money, he plucks coin after coin from his pocket until the woman's hands are overflowing. Truly generous. He quiets his friends by admonishing them, "Unless I give what I am able, I won't be happy." So we give what we are able. But at this time of year, the impulse or the pressure to give is especially strong. What do we do when we're not able? Some of us think that we don't have much to give. I've shared before a little bit about my own financial history situation. We grew up with not a lot of money. We didn't call it poor. We had enough to eat. We didn't live in a shack. But we didn't have a lot. And as an adult, I've never had a proper career. I worked part-time as a graduate teaching assistant, later as a union organizer, an adjunct professor. For a period when I really burned out, I worked as a barista, where I made a very nice cup of cappuccino, until I got promoted to waitress. I tried settling down with a nonprofit. But eventually, when the recession hit, we went bust because we couldn't secure enough funding. And now that I've gone back to school, to seminary, my budget has become even tighter than it had already been. So I have some experience with not having much and thinking that I don't have much. Sometimes, I'll admit, I feel downright stingy about what I can give and what I can share. And I know that some of us are feeling that economic pressure now, and it's a new feeling. There are those among us who are used to having more, but because of tough economic times, we just don't have what we did. And we say tough economic times so much, I think we lose sight of what that actually means. We are deep into a global recession. Nationally, the unemployment rate is 7.9%. In New Jersey, it's 9.7%, the fourth highest in the country. The underemployment rate in New Jersey is 16%. I know a lot of people are hurting, and we have to make difficult and unfamiliar choices about what we can give and what we can share. And this at a time when that need seems even more palpable. The Census Bureau reports that 46.2 million people, that's 15% of all Americans, 21.9% of all children lived in poverty in 2011. That's the largest number since we've started keeping poverty measurements 53 years ago. 1 in 6 Americans go hungry. That means that 50.1 million people, 33.5 million children, and 16.7 million children don't get enough to eat. We know something about that here. People in this congregation have involved their families in feeding the hungry through giving to Tony's Kitchen and serving with MESH. For some of us, it's not a challenge to muster the resources to give. For those of us who are blessed with much, giving can be easy. It can be so easy that we give without giving much thought to it. For those of us, the challenge is different. When I worked for the nonprofit, one of my bosses would always talk about the WIFM. I think he probably had just gone to a workshop because every meeting was the WIFM, the WIFM. The WIFM is W-I-F-M, what's in it for me? And he didn't necessarily mean that in a selfish or grasping way. What he meant was what motivates people, including funders, is knowing what they get out of their giving. That's a pretty clear articulation of when I give, I receive, and being open to the benefits of one's giving. And that's fine for the corporate world or even the nonprofit world. But for a faith community, we can dig a little deeper. I want to return to the Buddhist vow to perfect generosity. The Buddhist vow is not simply to give what we can to alleviate suffering for others. The selfless vow recognizes our interconnectedness and that through giving to alleviate the suffering of others, we also alleviate our own suffering. Recognizing the reciprocal nature of giving is not just about being open to the benefits of our own giving. It's to recognize that everyone has something to give. The richest among us have needs to be filled, and the poorest among us have gifts to share. More perfect generosity is recognizing and accepting these gifts. In his book about the six perfections, Dale Wright identifies three common traps of imperfect giving. Servility to others, or giving more than one really can. Contempt for the receivers, manifested in pity, disdain, or resentment for those to whom we give. And the third, fostering dependency among receivers. To give to people in need is an excellent thing. It's admirable. It does relieve suffering in the world. But when we give without receiving, when we give without recognizing the ways that we are interconnected, without recognizing that we are one and that our destinies are linked, we do a disservice to those to whom we give. And we rob others of the opportunity to share their own gifts with pride and with dignity. We lose the chance to be connected with each other as one. And there we can do better. True generosity, more perfect generosity, is recognizing that we all have something to give, even when we think we don't. And even when we think they don't, there's always more. I have one more story. Last week, if you were here, you know that the senior youth hosted the Thanksgiving brunch, and we hope that that will be an annual event. For a couple weeks, we've been planning. Henry made an announcement a few weeks ago asking people to let us know if you were coming and to let us know what you were bringing so we would know if we had enough food and what we needed to purchase or to cook to be able to fill in. And up until the 11th hour, we still didn't know. It was hours before. And the best that we could estimate was 25 to 50 people. And so when people were freaking out about whether or not we'd have potatoes or whether or not we had enough turkey, I would just keep saying loaves and fishes. Loaves and fishes Loaves and fishes is a story that's all over the New Testament. I don't have the page where it is, but I can tell you the story of loaves and fishes. Jesus and his disciples are ministering to people, and the crowd grows to the thousands. It starts to get late. It's time to eat. And the disciples come to Jesus and ask him to send the people away so that they can find food. And Jesus tells them, "You feed them." And they come back with, "Well, we don't have enough. We just have 5 loaves, 2 fishes. It's one or the other." They have 2 loaves and 5 fishes. And so if you grew up in the Christian church, you possibly know the story better than I do, but you know where this is going. Jesus tells them, "Bring what you have to me." And he blesses the food, and he sends the disciples back out to feed the thousands of people. And after everyone has eaten, and they collect the leftovers, they have 12 baskets, because there is always more. When I was trying to think of music for this, I didn't talk to Marcus about this story beforehand, and I didn't know that he would pick that song. I thought that we would be a lot more focused on giving. But that song, that hymn that we sang, is the perfect hymn, because no matter how little we feel we have, or how much we feel we've already given, there is always more. No matter how little we think that others have to give to us, there is more. There is more love, and there is more hope. And because of that, there can be more food in the kitchen for MESH. There can be more gifts for children who need them. There's more time to spend with people who are lonely or people who miss us and want to see us more. There is more. And when we open ourselves to that gift, to the giving of it, and to the receiving of it, there is more peace and there is more joy. We have an opportunity with MESH and with MANTLE and with all of the ways that we give, not just to open our pockets, but to open our hearts. And I don't have a program or a next step for how we do that, but I don't think we need one. I think our first step is to recognize the need and to fill it, certainly. But then to look deeper, to see our sisters and brothers, our sons and daughters, and to recognize that just as they have empty spaces to fill, they have beautiful gifts to share with us. May we be open to receiving those gifts. Blessed be, and amen. W.E.B. Du Bois wrote, "Now is the accepted time. Not tomorrow, not some more convenient season. It is today that our best work can be done, and not some future day or future year. It is today that we fit ourselves for the greater usefulness of tomorrow. Today is a seed time. Now are the hours of work, and tomorrow comes the harvest and the playtime." May the prayers of our hearts and the songs of our lips shared in this holy hour of worship be with us now and all the days to come. As we extinguish our chalice, our worship has ended. Let our service begin.